This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Among the fields of oil.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The price of oil hit another all-time high today, $135 a barrel. Then it slid back a bit, mainly because the dollar gained value. But the gap between oil supply and demand looms as a huge problem. Oil fields around the world just aren't producing enough to keep up. In fact, the International Energy Agency is working on a study of 400 oil fields. Our correspondent in London, Stephen Beard, has been looking into this. Stephen, what's the IEA say about these fields?
It says that the problem is a lot of them are getting pretty old, and a major problem is lack of investment. Companies and countries simply have not been putting enough money in to develop these fields and to produce more capacity.
And what does this mean for the price of oil in the next few years?
Well, it obviously means there's going to be upward pressure. Now, the higher the price goes, that presumably will dent demand. But we've already, as you say, got oil at $135 a barrel. Goldman Sachs is forecasting $200 a barrel next year.
Does the IEA have any suggestions on how we can close the supply-demand gap?
The agency says what's required is much more investment. Now, if this were a completely commercial industry, these high prices would trigger automatically a lot more investment. But as Leo Drolis, a highly respected oil analyst here in London, points out, this is not a completely commercial industry.
Oil-producing countries have nationalized industries. In a number of cases, the funds that are, so to speak, given back to the industry to invest and expand output are not forthcoming.
So, he says, the oil producers really do have the consuming nations over a barrel.
In the bygone era, gunboats would have been sent out to areas that were reluctant to produce more oil, so to speak. But, of course, these days it can't be done.
Although, of course, as we know, Congress is considering an alternative. It is talking about suing OPEC.
So lawsuits instead of gunboats.
Indeed.
All right, Stephen Beard in London, thank you.
Okay, Scott.
On Wall Street, the Dow has some catching up to do after consecutive 200-point losses. It's not catching up quite yet. So far, get my screen here. The Dow is up 5 points, actually, to 12,606. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are flat. Stocks were down in the early going. In Asia, stocks finished mostly lower. European shares are down a fraction so far. One of the most frustrating issues of our time has to be health insurance. States are going back to the drawing board trying to come up with something new, like health plans with no frills. Florida just signed something into law this week. Insurance companies have to offer cheap plans without all the extras. But as Dan Gretsch reports, people better read the fine print.
The Cover Florida plan allows insurers to cap reimbursements on some procedures and sheds many previously mandated services such as acupuncture and podiatry. Insurance companies could also limit how many days of hospitalization it will cover.
You know, you get what you pay for.
That's healthcare policy expert Uwe Reinhardt with Princeton University. He says this plan will give people a false sense of security.
One might call it insurance, you know. You get a little bit coverage, and then on the third day of a hospital stay that really requires aid, they tell you, well, you're on your own now. You either go home bleeding, or we're going to forfeit your car and your house.
13 other states have passed laws allowing similar bare-bones policies, but the plans haven't proven very popular. Florida aims to start selling the policies in January. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Introducing ThriveQ, an online tool that helps you know where you stand on your path to retirement. More at ThriveQ.com. And by the Henry Luce Foundation, seeking to increase American understanding of East and Southeast Asia.
I've been reading stories about people buying food and gas on their credit cards because they don't have enough cash. That's not a good sign for the economy, which is very much driven by consumer spending. If people have too much personal debt, they won't be buying anything except food and gas. Economics professor Stephen Fazzari says what this adds up to is a deeper recession than normal.
The recession of 1990 and 1991, as well as the recession of 2001, were, I believe, somewhat milder because consumer spending held up reasonably well. If we look back to the middle 1970s or the early 1980s, when we had deeper recessions, consumer spending dropped during those periods rather significantly. So as we go into this period, when high debt is likely to cause cutback in the household sector, we have to expect that the recession will be deeper than what we've seen the past two downturns in the economy.
But exactly how does that personal debt affect the bigger economy?
When consumers are building up that debt, it's a stimulative factor for the economy because it allows them to spend more and creates more revenue for business. But when they have to pull back, when they have to pay down that debt, consumer spending necessarily has to fall. The saving rate has to rise to make the payoff of the debt possible. The economy is going to slow unless there's some other source of spending that comes in to fill the gap where consumers have left.
What do you think we should do about this?
It's a hard problem. In the short term, it's going to be very difficult to do anything to prevent a recession and probably to prevent a rather long and deep recession. Over the longer term, it would probably be better to have a system that relied less on consumer debt, maybe more on higher incomes, faster wage growth, stronger investment, stronger export markets to help sustain the economy in the future. So we don't rely so much on building up debt or on having a housing bubble or a NASDAQ bubble or the other kinds of things that have supported the economy in recent years.
Professor Stephen Fazzari at Washington University in St. Louis, thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Share your comments with us at marketplace.org. Talk about robbing Peter to pay Paul. The Swiss bank UBS was planning to sell $15 billion of subprime investments to the American firm BlackRock. Well, BlackRock didn't have $15 billion, so UBS loaned it the other $11 billion. That's how badly UBS wanted to get rid of those mortgage securities. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.